This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 539, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 539. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
For the king.
Sorry, Ron, we're not doing that show. I'm not.
We are iFanboy. We like comics and Warcraft. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, some other books. Maybe not listener mail for the foreseeable future as we do these rebirths books, but it'll be fun regardless. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, exercise some caution, and as I said just a minute ago, we are in the midst of DC Rebirth, so we'll be doing our special Rebirth segment soon after the Pick of the Week, in which Josh had.
Yeah, I meant to say more work, but I blew it.
What is it?
All right.
No one else available?
I'll do what it takes. Those guys were useless. Aerial ones, right? And they drop bombs or something.
Yeah. Well, they weren't that bad.
I was bad at it, yeah. So pretty much everyone was useless. I don't. I like to think I'm a smart person, but you give me a strategy game, and I'm like, I don't know. Pick of the week is Grizzly Shark versus Sea Bear number 3 by Ryan Ottley with colors by Ivan Placentia. Actually, the whole thing's by Ryan Ottley. Story, art, and letters, other than the color. Which in the middle of reading this, I noticed I was like, wait, is he lettering this too by hand? All right.
I noticed that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And well, I mean, really, the reason that this is the pick of the week and the reason that that is part of it is that, like, do you know how every once in a while, if you like a musician or somebody who's been around for a really long time and they had a couple of really great seminal albums and then you realize it's like 20 years later and they're just doing these albums that they're like, well, that seems really simple. You're just like... Not that I'm a huge fan, but like Keith Richards, he does this. Like he releases albums, and no one listens to them. But they're just these like rootsy blues albums. Yes, he does. Wow. They're just roots blues albums, and you know he probably spends more on them than most people who are making like chart topping albums do. You know, but they're just like these back to basics sort of albums, and I never kind of understood that, and I'm starting to see myself understand it in comics. And so you've got this guy, you know, Ryan Ottley, who's been on Invincible for. Probably his
14 years, 15 years, his entire adult life
at this point. And it is what it is, and it's great, and he's great, and he's like, I just think I want to do this fun thing. And what you get is Grizzly Shark Sea Bear, which was the first sort of one shot was a pick of the week forever ago, and then he just had fun with it and always wanted to come back. And to me, these books, and especially this last issue here, is just this bit of fun. This guy who's like, I have all these skills at my disposal, and I'm just going to do something really basic and silly and raw and fun. And as a result of that, like, I had more fun reading this than anything else I read this book. It, like, I was sitting there, like, I want to say 11 o'clock on Wednesday night, sort of plowing through all these books. Some of them I felt I had to read, and some I didn't. And like, there's these stupidest things in this book, and I just started laughing. Mm-hmm. Like, you ever sitting by yourself reading something, and you just start laughing for a minute or two straight? It's like the yes. best feeling in the world.
It really is. And this book has multiple moments of that. Yeah.
Exactly. At one point, there's some gross shit in here. I'm like, Ryan's a sicko. But like, there's this bit where basically the sea bear shows up. And I feel like I don't want to have to explain this to you because I told you what the title was, and that pretty much covers it. There's a grizzly shark who is in the woods, and there's a sea bear who lives in the sea, and they fight. And at one point, there's this huge fight where the bear and the shark are flying at each other, and there's speed lines everywhere, and they hit the dirt, and there's one panel where the bear is about to strike, and he's like, "Rawr!" And the shark's fin digs in the sand and just goes shuffle, shuffle, and he throws sand in this bear's face, and I just lost it. Because it was a really nice bit of dynamic timing. We've got all these things moving around, and then he brought it right down, just with the panel size and with the sort of hand-done lettering of the sound effect, and it was a really fun dynamic, and it was a great comedy beat that really takes skill to learn how to do on a comic book page. That really was the moment that I was like, I'm really, really enjoying this. And then the rest of it was just super fun to read all the way through, like the other issues, but this definitely had like a culmination kind of feel to it, where so he kind of went over the top with some of the layouts, and there was like these big epic sort of, there's a bit where there's a bunch of people flying through the air on one side and then a bunch of sharks flying through the air, and they both sort of pop out of the trees as the sun is behind them in the clouds, and just like
this kind of epic battle issue had a lot of good moments. But for me, I think the moment that stood out to me the most was so at some point, you know, so the grizzly shark is tearing through the forest, and we have our little hillbilly protagonists, I guess, or, you know, the survivors, almost, you know, like almost borrowing a page from The Walking Dead. They're trying to get, you know, and it seems all hope is lost until the sea bear emerges from the water. And at one point, the shark that he's fighting gets thrown into the water, and we realize that the grizzly shark cannot swim, which I found very funny. And then later on in the issue, the sea bear goes to throw him into the water and misses the water and throws the grizzly shark into a boat, where the grizzly shark eats the people in the boat and then drives the boat back to shore. And that made me laugh.
And he crashes.
Just a shot of the shark driving a boat. It was just like...
And it's, there's two panels, and it's super. Oh, whenever anybody uses the push sound effect,
yeah,
like he's just basically straight out raw having fun. This is what would be funny to me, and he's so skilled as a comic book artist that it totally works, as opposed to just being masturbatory, I suppose. It's just fun to read, and he drives that boat into the shore. The boat explodes for some reason. And yep. then the next is a big panel of the shark coming straight at us, smiling. It's just, it's all out like comic book id throughout here, and it's really stupid and fun. And I don't have a lot of other analysis for it. I just really, really enjoyed it.
And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes that's all you need. You know, like I think that there's nothing in terms of expressionistic art, and especially in front of comics, there's nothing better than a creator doing what they love the most. And this is clearly, you know, Otley having fun and doing comics for himself. Well, you know, who cares if anybody else likes it? He's lucky that he's got you that likes it.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else does, but, you know.
We put it up on Twitter. There were a few very positive responses right away, and that made me feel good.
Because you probably got all the readers.
Well, yeah. Well, because as you know, I've got a little bit of a shell shock issue with making the wrong pick for people's tastes.
So, especially when it comes to DC.
Well, it's always on a big DC week that I end up having it, and that's fine. Whatever. That's fine. But, you know, like, the other thing is, like, I'm reading all these books, you know, I'm reading a bunch of the DC Rebirth books that I might not normally read, and I'm thinking about them a lot. And this was, like, a book, I don't have
how
to think
much,
about
though,
it.
How much are you thinking about?
I mean, let's say I started Wednesday morning early. Right. We record on a Friday, so I'd say, I want to say 85 to 90% of my waking time has been devoted to thinking about that, you know. I know that's not as much as you would expect, but... It's the best I can cram out. I do have to sleep. But, you know, just thinking about all those other things and what is it. And then when I'm reading Grizzly Shark and Sea Bear, like, I don't care. I'm just enjoying it. I'm like, it's really good, and I'm enjoying it, and I don't have to analyze it, and I don't want that all the time. But it's just super fun, and you know, I think if you dig like what he does on Invincible, and you sort of like that bombastic style, this is it. Also, just stripped down even more. And we're gonna talk about do a quick bit on a Howard Chaykin book this week, and like that's Howard Chaykin's version of what he does for fun.
don't ruin it.
I'm not. I just love that like you give an artist like do anything you want, and you get such varied things out of it. Like this is what Ryan Ollie gives you. That's what Howard Chaykin gives you. Everything in between. They couldn't be any more different. I love it.
And that's really what it's all about, you know. This definitely had its amusing moments. I could see why this would work for you. I don't know, and I don't mean that in like, oh yeah, yeah, I see no, why
I,
you like this.
I know you like it. No, there's no qualifications to this pick. There was nothing else I liked. I was just like, I looked at them and I went, that's my pick of the week. It was the only thing that was even close. But for very simple reasons.
Yep. All right. Cool. So that's the pick of the week. So now we move on to the Rebirth section, and if you're new to the show this week, we were rating all of the DC Rebirth books.
Ratings.
As a tribute to our one of our favorite shows, Mike and Tom Eat Snacks, we're using the PR system, where we pick a comic, read a comic, rate a comic on the 1 to 5 scale, and then we talk
because
about whether or not
we can't eat comics.
Because we can eat. Well, you
digitally,
could.
Digitally, it's very difficult. Yeah.
I couldn't eat this version 1 iPad comic because I would get for sure some sort of radiation poisoning. But so we're going to rate each comic and then talk about whether or not we're going to continue on as the comics move on into their regular lives. And we'll start with Aquaman Rebirth number 1, written by Dan Abnett with art by Scott Eaton and Oscar Jimenez. And I admit I have a soft spot for Aquaman. He's one of my favorite characters. Much like last week's Green Arrow, he's always been one of my favorites. I always try to read his series. He had a great run with Peter David for so long, and then it sort of fell off the rails. He had a solid run with Jeff Johns, and here we go with Rebirth. And I like this, although this is one of those characters that didn't need to be changed a whole lot. And so he's similar to Batman in that sense, in that this is pretty much the same Aquaman as before, in the same world as before, sort of scenario as before. What I did like, though, is that Abnett added the tension in the marriage between Aquaman and Mera, or the relationship. I don't know if they're married here or not. I can't remember. In that she doesn't really like him gallivanting around the world and being a superhero, but she does it. She puts up with it because she loves him, but she's an isolationist. And so there, in addition to that tension existing in Atlantean society, exists in their relationship. So I think that's an interesting take on it. Overall, though, you know, this is sort of your standard Atlantean terrorists go to attack Boston and Aquaman stops them. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this didn't feel to me a whole lot different than Aquaman when Jeff Johns took it over right before New 52, right? Wasn't that right before New 52?
No, it was for New 52.
Oh, it was for the New 52. Anyway, but it didn't feel a lot different than that.
Right.
All the way down to the seafood restaurant, which I find very odd that Aquaman would eat at a seafood restaurant.
You know, it was interesting. You know, it's a superhero trope, and you kind of live with them. But for some reason, There's a shot of him at the restaurant, and he's got a spoon in his hand. It's a low angle shot, yep. And he's holding the spoon in his big green glove. And I'm just like, why don't you take the glove off?
For me, it was the moment where he's sitting in the restaurant, and the waitress is like, "So you want to hear the specials?" And he's like, "Okay." And it was just so like oddly mundane,
but
and it was just
like hometown. Like that's the point.
Yeah, that's where his dad took him and all that. But still, it was just I don't know, something about it just struck me funny. I mean, I thought this was fine. I mean, again, like I said, I didn't notice a whole lot of difference between, you know, I mean, I thought if you haven't been reading Aquaman or if you've been curious about Aquaman, it kind of sets the stage pretty well. But I didn't feel as if it was anything dramatically different than what I'd known previously. So
correct.
Yeah.
The only thing to note is that the cover artist Brad Walker will be the series artist going forward.
That's okay. Cool.
So he's not actually in this issue. I really like the Oscar Jimenez wraparound art. The Scott Eaton art was, you know, like serviceable DC comic art, but the Jimenez art was actually really dynamic and cool. When I first started reading it, I was like, and then it changed very quickly. But
I hate that feeling, though. But I really hate that when you get really excited and then they switch it up. Like, I understand what they're doing and they're getting the books done and all that sort of stuff. But that's like that happened with the Green Lanterns book last week. Yeah. And I'm just like, come on, you know,
Anyway. So Brad Walker and Jesus Marino will be switching off on Aquaman. So I think they'll have a strong art team. And I have faith in Dan Abnett. He's a iFanboy favorite.
Yep.
And I trust he'll be able to add something interesting to the Atlantean society here.
So I want to hear what Josh thinks.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's well written. On a lot of stuff I've been reading, I'm like, oh, that's really, I don't, but when Dan Abnett, I'm like, his prose is really nice. Obviously, he's a prose writer. So, it all sounded good, but, it was very much, I feel like I've read, I'm going to say 5 or 6 Aquaman reboots in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you mentioned that other one, there was Kurt Busiek, there was Geoff Johns, there was Jeff Parker took it over at one point. Right. There's a bunch of them, and they're kind of always exactly the same.
And you know why that is? I feel like it's because he's never out of the sea basically anymore. Mm-hmm. He's never doing anything but dealing with Atlantean politics, which is interesting, but after a while it starts to feel very repetitive, and not in the superhero way where it's all very repetitive by nature, but
I don't feel like I don't feel like we care about the Atlantean politics, and we've covered it a bunch of ways, and it's always the same, and it's always the same kind of stock alien culture kind of thing.
Yeah, and nothing's ever going to be better than what Peter David did, in which he completely redesigned and reinvigorated the Atlanteans, and now it's just sort of paler shades of that.
The thing I'm getting to over and over again is I'm not wowed by any of these. I don't get the point of doing it, other than you're just starting a new number one. You're not really changing anything. You're not really doing anything differently. And they keep saying they're going to, and it's the same bench. It's the same team over and over again. And it's fine. It's not bad, but it's not good. And I want it to be good. I want to like that. And if I think about it, I think my favorite probably Aquaman story is, and this is an origin thing sort of, but when Mark Waid did the Justice League one.
Year one.
Yeah. With Barry Kitson?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun because they were meeting Aquaman and he was different and he had to fit into this team. And this is just heavy as the head that wears the wet crown.
Right. Well, the crown is wet, so it's heavier.
Yeah, well, understandable. But he's underwater, so that's displaced. So it's a zero-sum game in that sense.
When he comes out to get his lunch from this is chowder from the
place. That's his call. Well, and the other thing is I've been reading. I read. I know things. The ocean is fucked right now. We have serious. No, I'm not even we have seriously as a humanity fucked up the ocean in a big, bad, irreversible way. And I just keep thinking the Atlantean terrorists are right. And if I was Arthur or I was Namor, if I was writing any story like this, and there's no way to get away with it, he's supposed to be a superhero, but they would be right to wage war on the surface dwellers. And honestly, I was thinking, and I can't help it because I know things, but I see him at the fast food seafood place, and I think you shouldn't eat there. That industry is detrimental to your home.
Maybe not in the DC universe.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the right way to approach it, obviously. But that's what I was thinking at the beginning. And then he went and he said, I was like, oh, fast food, seafood. That's they're just ocean trawling on the bottom. And that's not anybody's fault. But that was creeping into my head as I was reading this, is that, maybe the terrorists are right on this one. And I know, watch, people get mad at me. But it's just an interesting dynamic to have him be there. And they kind of talked about that, where he's he's trying to appease and work with the surface dwellers. And, he's, whatever, the less radical arm of Palestine or something like that. And I don't know. But either way, I feels like there are other stories here, and they just keep telling the same one.
Yeah, that's the only downside to it. So we'll see how it goes.
And so if you like doing this over and over again, and I imagine there are maybe up to 30,000 people who do, then fine, but it's the same. It's the treadmill.
I feel as if this didn't shock the earth or the sea. It is Aquaman. It is what it is, and he's wearing orange, and they set the stage in Atlantis, and more of the same. So,
ratings.
Am I starting?
Sure.
Okay, I'm gonna give this a. I'm gonna give it a 3.5. It was good, not great, serviceable, everything was fine, no real complaints, just didn't blow me away. 3.5.
I give it a 3.
All right.
I am going to give it a 2.5 and say exactly the same thing that Ron did.
Sticking with it?
No.
Yes, but it's on a short leash.
I haven't decided. I'm leaning towards no, but I want to. The thing is, I want to like Aquaman. And so, like, I do. But it also feels like they're using these rebirth issues as a jumping on point, and none of us need that. So it makes sense that it would be unexciting, I suppose.
Right.
It's super recappy.
All right, I'm going to flip-flop in the script here and go to Wonder Woman Rebirth number one.
Okay.
Greg Rucka and art by Matthew Clark and series artist Liam Sharp. So the artist for the second half is going to be one of the rotating artists on Wonder Woman.
Okay.
This was good. I think what's interesting about this was a very meta-textual look at superhero comics in that things keep changing. Memory is false. You can't trust the stories you've heard because they may be wrong. And I enjoyed that. I like that aspect of it. Because especially for a character like Wonder Woman who's gone through many different iterations, especially lately. I mean, there's a point here where is she the daughter of Zeus, or does she come from clay, or what? And then the Zeus's helmet is turned out to be false. So I liked that play on.
Or Ares' helmet.
Yeah. Ares' helmet.
Yeah.
I like that play on how superhero comics work, in that things are constantly changing and you can't really rely on any of it as truth.
Yeah, well, I thought this was funny reading that and going through that, and it kind of felt like, this is also, somewhat a triumphant return of Greg Rucka to Wonder Woman. And so this kind of felt, very much like, the DC Rebirth issue itself with Geoff Johns parsing the past 5 years. This felt like Greg Rucka trying to make sense of while he's been away. And and whether you want to read into it, I picked up, kind of, scathing commentary, but maybe I'm adding that, maybe that's not intended or whatnot, but it definitely felt like it was a metatextual summary of what Wonder Woman's been going through since Rucka's been gone. And I like the twist of that, is like, okay, well, now we're gonna get to the bottom of it, like, right. I think that's a good launching point.
I don't want it. Like, I don't want I don't want that explanation. Like, that was one of the things I really liked about Azzarello and Chang, is that they were just like, here we are.
Yeah.
And they told their story, and I don't want it explained to me anymore. I don't, like, it doesn't make sense. It's never going to make sense. So stop trying to make it make sense. Tell your story.
I don't think that's what they're doing. I think he's just saying it's all screwed up. It's never going to match up.
I know, but I'm saying, like, I'm sitting here, I'm ready for a Wonder Woman story.
And what's funny is that, like, I at some points it was very unsubtle, to the point of her taking off the New 52 costume and putting on the classic, red, blue and gold, uniform costume, kind of right on the nose in that regard. And but the thing is, similar to how Josh is with me with Aquaman, I echo Josh in that, like, Wonder Woman's not a character that I have a lot of passion for or care about. And so, like, I don't necessarily, I wouldn't say I don't want it, but I don't need it, it's interesting, but I'm not terribly compelled after this to, to get to the bottom of it. That's personally me.
I do. Like, I've read good Wonder Woman stories, and I really like her. I like the things that you can do with her. I like the things that you can say with her in the context of the world we live in. And I don't, like, this bit feels kind of like a waste of time. I suppose. Yeah. I want them to get to it. It's not bad. Well, like, it's the same thing as Aquaman. But I don't have any complaints.
This is the it they're getting to. You just don't like the it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
This is the story he's telling. Is he's, and that's sort of a Wonder Woman trope too, is to re-examine her origins, and redefine them. That's sort of the Wonder Woman story to tell. It's funny because I love Greg Rucka.
Yeah,
but I
yeah.
didn't. I didn't love his original Wonder Woman run at all. I found it kind of boring.
It
was very heavy into politics, and her, she was the diplomat, and it just wasn't a very exciting Wonder Woman. And this is, I'm hoping going forward. So what's going to happen with this book is this: we're running. This is another biweekly book, and one issue will be the modern day Wonder Woman investigating her past, trying to figure out what happened to her, and then the other issue will be Wonder Woman Year One, drawn by Nicola Scott.
So it's going to be alternating issues.
Yeah.
That I wonder how frustrating that's going to be as a reader.
Well, it's almost just like getting two Wonder Woman books.
It's true.
Yeah. It's just the only number things the numbers will change. They're going to come out monthly, so it's not that far off.
Part of that sounds interesting. But again, it should make, just telling an origin again.
They should make them issue 1 and issue 1.5.
Right.
And issue 2 and issue 2.5.
When how does the Wonder All-Star Wonder Woman fit in there? When's he going to get to that?
It's already come out.
It did, it actually?
It already came out. Yeah, the hardcover came out, yeah.
Oh, was that the hardcover, not his issues?
Yeah.
No, well, look at that.
I'm sorry. No, also, it was great. Wonder Woman Earth 1, that's how it came out.
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
You mean the Grant Morrison, Josh?
No, what's his name? I can't think of his name. He only
Adam Hughes? Now.
Yeah, Hughes.
No, that's never going to happen. No, also, Wonder Woman Earth 1 came out already.
I just remember he's like, and this time I mean it. Sure.
Sure.
All right, so ratings.
I actually, we didn't mention the art at all. I actually did like the art. I thought the art was, even though it was different artists, I thought the art was consistently quality, and I had no complaints about the art.
I like Matthew Clark.
And I like Liam Sharp. So I'm going to give this a 3.5 in that it was solid, it was quality, I get it or whatever, but it just didn't blow me away.
So you're like average. Your C is 3.5. 3.5 seems like a high rating to me.
This is the problem when we get into the ratings. I mean, ratings. That's the ratings.
3.7?
No, it's a 3.5. 3.5.
Like that feels like that's like a B-.
Yeah, a B-. I give it a B-.
Okay.
I give it a 4.
Okay.
2.5.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Sticking with it.
No.
Yes.
We'll have to see. I'll probably read the next one. I'll probably need to read the next one. I'll read the Nicola Scott one if that's not that'll probably be the second issue though, right?
Yes, probably. Yeah. All right, moving on to my pick of the week, The Flash Rebirth number 1 from Josh Williamson, art by Carmine Di Giadomenico, who is one of the series artists. He's going to be alternating with Neil Gooch.
Those are both really fun names to say for different reasons.
And this is basically DC Rebirth number 2.
Yeah.
In that the story continues from when Barry and Wally met together. And I don't know, Ron, if it's because I'm enjoying the TV show so much, so I just love The Flash right now, but this felt very much like of the many characters I want fixed, and I put Green Lantern up there, The Flash is another one. I need to love The Flash again. And
this one's actually telling a story.
Yeah.
Like there's a thing that we don't know. We haven't seen anything else we don't know or don't understand. Like this, it does feel like one of those Flash stories that we've read before, but it's a new story at least. Like I want to know how they're going to pull in, you know, Dr. Manhattan. I want to know how that all works.
Well, that's what made me think when I was reading this. I was like, "You know what? How are they going to do this?" Because
exactly.
It's not like there's a DC Rebirth series that's going to tell that story. Is it leading to like their first event that's going to be about Dr. Manhattan? Or I have no idea where this story is going to play out. So that's what I found interesting about.
Right. And that's a feeling that's very different than all the other ones that I've read so far.
I love the art. I like, you know, one of my big complaints has been they took the simplistic beauty of the Flash costume and made it overly complicated with all those dumb lines. And here, they seem to get around, or at least the artist seems to get around that by making the lines more elevated lightning bolts.
Yeah.
So while they're still there, they aren't really on his body.
Yeah, they aren't as core to the costume as they were in the New 52.
I can kind of live with that, but I like the way this book looked a lot, and this bodes well for the look and feel of the Flash series going forward.
So yeah, it's funny because I feel like you took a lot of the words out of my mouth.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I wondered if my excitement for this wasn't magnified by my excitement for the TV show, my enjoyment of the TV show over the past couple of years, and the lack of Flash in my life. But that said, I thought Josh Williamson is a great writer who gets he's been doing Nailbiter over an Image, which is very kind of serial killery, but also procedural, kind of crime stuff. So he gets that side, the CSI side of the Barry Allen, the cop side of Barry Allen. It picked up the emotion from Rebirth with Wally. I thought that was good.
He loves the Flash.
Yeah, and I thought the interaction with Batman was compelling and really quality. Love the art. Agreed with you on the costume. This is my pick of the week, and I loved it. It was great. It was fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah.
This made me so happy.
Ron said a lot of the things that I was thinking. So it's a nice little daisy chain effect going on. It's true. Like I like The Flash, but I don't feel like I've read a really good Flash story in a while, and this is compelling, and having Batman just be there as part of the story, but like not on the cover, like with Batman, like just it's DC family stuff, not you know, like the
right
PG rated stuff, but like it's the family. These guys are working together, and there's a mystery, and they have to work at it, and they're interesting relationships, and it looks great. I really liked DiGiomenico.
I like the idea of Wally, Barry, and Bruce investigating together.
Absolutely,
if they keep that going in the background. That'll be a great story.
It's the detectives or the scientists. I thought he explained that really well and made that make sense. And it worked on so many levels.
Yeah,
so, I love that they relate on a scientific level. I love that Barry is really antsy in the Batcave but won't show it out of respect. Like, I love all that, everything about it. This was really great.
The one line that he said, "Superman once told me you don't joke around in the Batcave." Like, I was like, little touches like that are perfect. Yeah. So
this was wonderful. Ratings.
Ratings. I'm gonna give it a 4.5. Only ding because while the stupid lines were better, they're still there. So
that is reasonable. I will give you that.
There were places there. I was reading this and I thought, wow, some of the art, they've stripped it down. It's really good. Like, I was glad they weren't making it too busy. And then there's a shot of them running on the water and the water is all digitally crappy.
Yeah.
Ugly. Mm. I wanted to strip out another 50% of that.
Yeah. Mm.
Other than that. Yeah.
I'll give it a 5.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I saw that coming.
And you?
I'll give it a 5.
Grumpy McGrumperson?
4. Strong 4. Right. A strong 4.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
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 Yes. Absolutely.
All right. So that's it for the Rebirth segment.
Cool. Ratings.
Ratings.
So, yes. Yeah, so it seems as if The Flash was the winner this week.
The Flash was the winner this week.
All right.
That was the first one I read, too. I was excited about it.
Yeah. Let's move on where it starts getting muddled, in which the Rebirth books are not done, but we're putting out regular issues.
But it's kind of a Rebirth book.
Hey, listen, the lights have got to stay on. The work's got to keep going.
Well, the Superman Rebirth issue last week served as a launching point for all the Superman books. So it wasn't like they were going to do Action Rebirth. So Action Comics 957, we returned to the original numbering.
Oh, wow.
Correct.
Throws me off on so many levels I don't even want to get into. However, this was the issue written by Dan Jurgens with art by Patrick Zercher. Remember him?
Ooh, yeah.
I do.
I loved the way it looked. He really... Yep. I thought that was great. I really like this. I think Jurgens can go either way. We saw him go one way with the Green Arrow New 52 issues, but I really liked his Superman Lois and Clark series, and I think this was a continuation of it. I know his style won't be for everyone, but I like the idea of this is sort of a take on the death of Superman in that, you know, now that Clark is the younger Clark died, people have stepped into the void, one of whom is Lex Luthor, and causing the real Clark, the pre-52 Clark to come back out of the shadows. And now there's also a Clark Kent out there. So I liked all this. I thought this was really fun. I really enjoyed this.
I read it on a whim. Yeah, I read it on a whim because I was like, hey, you know, why not? I'll keep rolling with it. And I don't like Superman enough to stick with this. I got it and everything. I would have liked to have seen bearded real Superman to stay in the shadows a little longer.
Well, he's been in the shadows for a long time. You just haven't been reading.
I just haven't read it. Yeah, but I guess for now, I thought that would have been more interesting, more compelling.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I don't know. That was just me. Josh, what did you think?
I'm going to split the middle. I saw Dan Jurgens. I was like, I don't know if I want to read that. But I was reading his style, and I was like, oh, this really works. It feels like Superman. Like, it feels correct the way that they're drawn and everything. But then at the same time, it felt a lot like going backwards instead of forwards, and I thought we were supposed to be going forwards with these books.
Or going forwards by going backwards.
You keep saying that.
Wait a minute. Sorry. Wait, are we now?
We're now.
Or are we then?
Now.
Is this now or when?
Just now.
So
that was then. This is now.
And I get it in this issue. You know, he's supposed to come out, but I know you've been reading the book and I haven't, but I thought it'd be fun. I was like, oh, why is he coming out already? Why is he shaving his beard already? You know.
Yeah, that was my exact same thought. My exact same thought.
I just thought, and it was really fast and kind of, because I hadn't been reading it, unearned, I suppose. Yeah. And I realized that it happened in the other things. And then I got, I don't know, I feel like I want them to strip Superman down more and more, and they just, like, Doomsday showed up again. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that was, I don't like that part.
Just did this.
I think they don't need to ever use Doomsday again.
I feel like Dan Jurgens needs to move on from 1992.
I mean, that's basically my point.
No, but it's not just Dan Jurgens. He's been used over and over and over.
I know, we just read it, but, like, I liked everything about it other than it was utterly and completely familiar, and I just keep waiting for somebody to break Superman open and make it into something new, and they're not going to do it. And I
find the new thing here is he's a father with a kid.
Yeah, but that's not even what I mean. I mean to break it down. I mean to, you know, do what New Frontier did to it. Just make it much more simple. And instead of making things simple, they always make things more complicated. And, you know, like that first issue of Astro City is one of the best Superman issues I ever read, you know, because it was simple. It was
agreed.
It was that guy. And this is not that. This is there's. Three versions of him. There's an extra Clark. Fucking Doomsday shows up. What's the deal with Luther? Like, focus.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I really liked the Luther bit because, as we've discussed before, in Luther's heart of hearts, he is Superman. So now, finally, he took his opportunity. I am now your savior. Worship me as you worshipped him. Mm-hmm. And that comes crashing down on him immediately. I like that a lot.
But with this book, just like all the others that I read, they're not bad. They're not badly done. I just don't really like the direction that they're going in. So it's a different kind of criticism, I suppose. I really like the Zercher art quite a bit, other than a few panels of Clark's face. Some of those were a little off. But other than that, pretty strong.
Right. So Detective Comics 934, the other first issue, as they returned also to the old numbering. And this is sort of a return to the Chuck Dixon era. What I mean is, when Tim Drake came along, they ushered in an era of the Batman family. That was what that post Tim Drake era was defined as. They, you know, Batman had this growing army. At one point, Chuck Dixon was writing all those books, Nightwing and Birds of Prey and Robin, and then they brought Spoiler in, and they brought Cassandra Cain in, and she had a book, and there was a whole big Batman family going on, and that feeling has not been around for a while. So this is what it seems as though the Detective Comics will be the return of the Batman family, written by James Tynion IV and drawn by Eddie Barrows.
And so the question is that a good thing?
Oh, totally for me. Yeah, I love that.
Did you like it?
I enjoyed this for a number of reasons. One, I'm a big Eddie Barrows fan. Always have been.
He's great. Yeah, and he's always like they always tease him. They're like, here he is, and then he's gone after three issues.
Right. So that's always the worry. But there's a reason why the art looks so good. It's because it takes a long time. But I liked – so the conceit of this story is that Batman needs the kids to be trained. So he calls on Batwoman since she's a military and has experience with training. And as also it turns out, they are related, which I actually did like. I didn't think I would at first, but I did. Mm-hmm. Her last name is Kane, and we've established that Martha – Bruce's mom.
Oh my God, that's Superman's mother's name too. Are we best friends?
It was also a Kane, so they decided they're basically distant cousins. So I like that aspect of it, and you know, it's nice to see Tim Drake in a Robin-esque costume, even though the double R is goddamn stupid.
The double R is fucking awful.
And I like Spoiler. I like Cassandra Cain. I can live with the outfit, which looks exactly like the one from the Avengers a couple years ago. That one. That mystery character that turned out to be Hawkeye.
Oh, Echo? Whisper?
Ronan. Yeah.
Her name was Echo, wasn't it?
Yeah, her name. It was Echo in the costume.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And then...
hold on. Before we move on from that, like, that Batgirl costume, the original one from that series, I don't even remember who did it now, it's one of the best costume designs in the last 20 years.
The one with the cover her mouth?
Yeah.
Yep.
Why?
Agreed.
What the hell?
She's not Batgirl. Barbara Gordon is.
It doesn't matter. Make her look cool.
Yeah, this is cool. Not a good design. They kept the mask. She still has the stitched-on mask, but the rest of it looks dumb. They've included Clayface for some unknown reason. And,
I like that. I really like that as a curveball.
It'd be very interesting. And I like the conceit. I mean, I like the family. I as long as Robin's cape covers the double R as much as possible.
is the double R worse than Alfred's hand?
No, but it's in the discussion.
It's like 80%.
It's in the mix.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, it felt like Tim Drake.
Yeah.
You know, I liked the little scene he had with the spoiler. James Tynion IV is not a writer who has ever blown me away. Yeah. He's always been someone who has gotten the job done and been serviceable, tells solid stories. He's a Scott Snyder protege, which was not surprising he got this this book. Yeah. But I'm waiting for him to tell the story that makes me go, okay, James Tynion IV is it. But I haven't read that story yet. Maybe this will be it.
My complaint about this is almost the opposite of all the other books. Is that, like, it did feel different. It did feel like it was moving. It did feel like it was breaking it and reforming. And I like the family. Just kind of overly explained. It was very setup-y instead of doing it naturally. Spoon-feeding us, I suppose. I didn't love the style of it. But I think it's a compelling start on a journey. From a concept point, whereas all the other concepts is like, why have we seen this before? This one, it was like, okay, here you go. Let's build that together. It's just, boy, those costumes are ugly.
Yeah. Ron, what'd you think?
I didn't read it.
That's a review of its own.
Yep, there it is. I did read Daredevil number 8, which is continued to be written by Charles Soule, this time with art by Goran Suzuka, who I adore. And this issue was fantastic, I thought.
James Bond, Daredevil.
Yeah, James Bond, Daredevil, interesting use of his powers. You know, basically it drops us into a story where he's in Macau in a high-stake poker tournament, and he's playing what's the Texas Hold'em poker, and he cannot see his cards, and he's completely playing off of the reactions of the other players as well as his just, like, let the dice roll, and I thought that was great. I thought it would, you know, the tension was there. You know, dropped us into a scenario where we didn't, you know, like, we're like, okay, what's going on here, and then came and told us what was going on. We had a great little kind of climactic battle between the pro poker player who's also a telepath, and there's like and because he's, you know, tapping into Matt's mind to see what Matt sees with the cards, but Matt doesn't see the cards. I thought that was really clever, and Matt trying to protect his identity on the telepathic plane. It had a lot of things going for it, and then it ends with Daredevil meeting up with Spider-Man, which is always fun.
Well, let me ask you a question. Can that stupid fucking glowing spider ruin a whole comic book?
No, I mean, it's hard.
Let me ask you this. Is the stupid fucking glowing spider worse than the double R?
No.
Really?
You can do a bracket. You can do a bracket and you could have an argument. Because the spider is still there. They just put a Photoshop glow effect on it. Added a second R. They fundamentally changed it.
Well, except it's fucking awful. And I think that I really hate it. Yeah. I don't understand it in any way. It does not fit with the aesthetic of what is. It's almost worse than changing Superman's costume.
Yeah. Almost.
Because look at it.
Yeah.
It's why is it there? It doesn't make sense.
Going back to Action Comics, by the way, when the real Superman got in costume, I was disappointed to see that it was a more modern costume. I was hoping for a more classic costume. But anyway, sorry.
It's way more classic than the one that he had previously.
Yeah, but it's way more modern than...
Except it's actually way more classic than you even think, because it recalls his original costume. Because in the original Action number 1 costume, he had blue boots.
Yeah, no, but you know my Superman is Kurt Swan, so...
I get it.
This was a great
issue. Not your Superman. I get
it. This was a great issue. It's a good Daredevil, is what I'm saying.
It was a great Daredevil. It was a great issue, Daredevil. Really, really excited for this arc. If Goran Suzuka is the artist on this arc, I'm in. And I like the clever use of powers. It just had everything going for it. Yay, Daredevil! Thumbs up.
So. His eyes glow too.
Yeah.
It's all bad, Josh. No one's arguing with you there.
What happened? Like, we have like what might be one of the greatest generations of like artists in comics, maybe ever collectively, and. Yeah. Just ugly town all over the place.
Well, being a good artist doesn't mean you're a good designer.
Well, the thing is, I'm the only one reading Amazing Spider-Man, I believe, and not only am I dealing with the glowing blue spider on a weekly basis, I'm dealing with the glowing blue spider on shitty Alex Ross painted covers. It's just it's awful.
Oh, stop.
Awful.
Let's take a quick break, talk about how you can support this show that everyone loves, because we love comics. Go to ifanboy.com/support where you can find a link to Amazon. That is, if you don't have an ad blocker and you're not a crime against humanity kind of person. Ad blockers are killing internet content, but that's another story. Amazon link will get you to Amazon. You can make your purchases. and help us out there. We really appreciate that. Anything you make, we get a little piece of it. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Amazon's pocket, and everyone's happy. So you can use that link, make it your bookmark, and never have to go to ifanboy.com/support again. Also on that page, you can find our membership program, where you can be $3 a month to $30 a year. You can become an iFanboy member. And should I tease that things might be, we might be an update with that soon?
Yeah, you can tease it. Let's leave it at that.
You did. You just
right. You just did. It just happened. Yeah. So.
And when did it happen? Now?
No, you just, the tease just happened. Then, now. Anyway. When?
We thank everyone who becomes an iFanboy member, and we appreciate you help us directly and keeps the lights going. And we literally, you know, we just upgraded some technology. So we were able to use some money to do that. So thank you very much. And also, you can also just donate there. There's a donate button. If you're one of those people who just wants to donate some money, and we see that quite regularly. Although we're still waiting for that billionaire who's got a tax issue, needs to unload some cash. We're still waiting for you.
One of those
people. Billionaire.
one of those people?
One of those people.
I don't know if that's okay.
So ifanboy.com/support, that's how you can help. And we appreciate everyone who does that. And let's move on to Midnight of the Soul, number one.
Oh.
Story and Art by Howard Chaykin. This was like pure, untapped, from the tree Howard Chaykin.
This is the good stuff. This is the good Chaykin. Pure Chaykin.
And in that sense, oof.
Seedy.
What's in your mind, Howard? You might not want to know.
He, you know, he has the thing he does, right? It's like a broken alpha male.
Yep.
Wronged by a woman. Usually takes place post-war America. And that's his thing. That's his milieu. And if you don't like that, then don't read Howard Chaykin. But this was good.
Yeah, this was real good. I'm on board for Midnight of the Soul. This is fantastic. I mean, yeah, we get introduced to a main character. It's 5 years after the war. He's trying to be struggling to be a writer. He's wrestling with alcoholism and previous addictions, and he's down on his luck. Has no money. His wife is up to no good. His wife's got a shitty brother. He's stuck on Long Island. I love the idea that he hasn't left it. He hasn't left his house for a year.
He rode his motorcycle in the yard.
Yeah, in circles. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like there'd be no grass, like not just a dark.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, there was a dark circle. Yeah, but now you know he's discovered what his wife has been up to, and now he's gets on the motorcycle and he's ready. He's heading into the city. Oh, this is great. So love it. Good shaking. Really yeah.
Real good shaking.
Blowjobs, Nazis, and motorcycle jackets.
All you need.
That's all there is.
The Vision, number 8, Tom King, Gabriel Hernandez Walda, Jordi Belair.
They have a dog now, so that's
and an uncle.
Yeah, I almost felt like I missed a thing. And then I was like, whatever, I get it. I'm going with it. Things are moving forward. I was really happy about that. I just, I really liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. I liked that every single thing is damaged in this.
Yep.
Like, there's no.
This is the American Beauty of comics right now.
It is.
There's no one's coming out of this like, oh, we can say it. Like, I don't know how you rescue the Vision himself from this other than he's a robot.
Right.
Or you just keep it in its bubble and you don't worry about it.
That's also fine.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Oh. Sort of its own continuity. Don't worry about how it connects and or how the Vision fits. Although the Vision's always been sad, right? That's always been one of the compelling things about the Vision is that he's a sad character.
Is he?
So, yes.
He's almost neutral.
Totally.
There's always been a bit of sadness to him. Yeah. Agreed.
Even an android can cry, Josh.
I just love him in clothes.
Yeah.
He has nice suits and jackets in this. It's very they all.
I love that he decides they all need to go out to eat in the restaurant, and by going out to eat, they just sat there. They ordered food, but he's like, "Don't bring it to us. Just wait 45 minutes, then bring me the bill." It's just so
just
weird.
Not quite getting it.
Yeah. So weird.
Do you remember this Victor story?
Yes, of course. Yeah, it was Runaways. It was Runaways.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was Runaways. Yep.
Okay. It's kind of familiar to me, but I was trying to think of it in the context of Avengers.
It started in later Runaways, and then it moved over to Avengers AI. I thought, actually, to be honest with you, I mean, I remembered it just because I'm up on my Marvel and all that sort of stuff. But I thought they explained it in a very elegant way that made it, if you'd never seen him or knew who he was, you got it. You know,
because I didn't read later Runaways, and I totally got it.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, well, that was the thing. Was it Vaughn or was that Joss Whedon?
No, it was later. It was post Vaughn.
Oh, okay,
was that the? It was the stuff. Well, the stuff that I was reading.
It was during Chaykin's run.
Yeah.
That did not work. Yeah. it was great.
Anyway, it's great stuff. So the Hanna-Barbera whatever continues. This time, this week with, you know, so last week we were, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? We were talking about Scooby-Doo. And to be clear, by the way, watch your ass, Ron. Our comments about Scooby-Doo had nothing on the creators. They did a fine job. It's the concept that we had a problem with, that I had a problem with at least. Howard Porter is an excellent artist. Jim DiMatteis and Keith Giffen, they're all legends. It's just, Anyway, so this time around, we get Wacky Raceland, a story by Ken Pontac with art by Leonardo Manco. And it's basically like, what? Remember we were talking about Wacky Races and how great they were, yes, and all that sort of stuff. So imagine, what if Wacky Races were like Mad Max? And that's basically what you got here.
That's because I didn't need the angst, and I also didn't need to upset further the Scooby-Doo lobby on Twitter.
Again,
I pissed off the Scooby-Doo lobby.
You know what? With that Scooby-Doo review, I don't even know if you want to call it a review. It really, to me, was I get that this isn't for me, but who is this for? And it feels like I got an answer to that, and I don't want an answer.
But you got it.
I got one, and it's for people.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, so be it. You got a heck of a team on that thing that's for you, people.
You do.
And this, I imagine, there's not an audience for this.
I don't know who wants this or reads this. And this was, I mean, this was more of a mess than anything. It was just all over the map.
The better it was Scooby-Doo.
I mean, worse. I'll give it worse. I'll say it was worse.
Playing a guitar that had flames coming out of it.
What I was going to say. Like, I think the only way that you can make this work is to have it be like, take that word that wacky that's in your title and just run with it. And I don't usually see DC do that. I mean, that guy, you need a guy with a guitar on elastomers with flames.
Yeah, there was no wacky to this at all. It was just really heavy, you know. And the thing is that like you know that it's supposed to have metal, you know, soundtrack to it, but like not good metal, you know.
I feel like you could do this and make it super post-apocalyptic, but it almost works only if it's like self-aware.
Yeah.
It's wacky. I mean, it's based off something incredibly silly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
I think it's a way to make it work. Leonardo Manco, by the way, he was on Hellblazer for a really long time. Near the end, great, great, great artist, and I was like, "Well, I'm glad he's working. Like he's awesome. I feel like you should give him better work than this."
Yeah,
but I didn't read it, so I don't know. But you did, and I shouldn't read it.
I know I seem to get a lot of flack whenever I talk about Howard the Duck on the show, but the Duck. I don't know why. I feel like there have been some specific haters out there. But Howard the Duck number 8, you know, while The Flash was my pick of the week, Howard the Duck number 8 was a close runner-up. Chip Zdarsky, Joe Quiona's, this was basically the return of Bev. And if you're an old-time Howard the Duck fan, you know that Bev was Howard the Duck's, partner. She was played by Leah Thompson in the movie, The Redhead. This was, like, heavy emotion. Also, really great flashbacks to old Howard the Duck stories with like retro kind of coloring and inking when Joe Rivera did those inks on it with Joe Quiona's. And they were able to, if you've never read a Howard the Duck issue and have known nothing about his relationship with Bev, you could read this issue and you totally get the point. You understand it. And then not only that, but I'll give Zdarsky and Quiona's credit, elegantly weaved in those flashbacks to have impact in the story today. Really powerful issue, really solid, great single issue, really impressed, really, like, I keep going back to elegant, like, it was just an elegant, emotional story.
Didn't they draw her to be Leah Thompson? That was a big thing.
No, well, that's the thing, at the end of the issue was that Howard's back in his office, and his new client comes in, and it's Leah Thompson.
Oh, that's what it was,
Caroline in the City crossover that we were hoping for?
No, unfortunately, you're still going to have to wait for that. Mm. So, this was great. This was, I mean, really, like, our art, storytelling, story. My only complaint is that in the middle of it, there's a big Sentinel robot that comes and attacks them, which I get the point it's making in the story, but I felt as if it still could have been powerful without that. But good stuff. Howard the Duck.
Star Wars Corner.
Darth Vader number 21. The stalwart team of Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca.
We're in the end run here, Josh.
And it's time for that.
When does it end?
25.
Yeah.
25,
all
right.
I would have liked this issue for the cover alone.
Yeah.
That's almost all that I wanted to say, but this defies logic to me.
Yeah.
I still like it a lot. It, like, for a little while I was fighting it, and now I'm just like, sweet, new Darth Vader issue.
Yep.
And it goes against everything that I want to say that I think that I care about Star Wars. and I'm cool with it. And I like the there's some big cool things in here. There's like cybernetically controlled space whales. I don't know. There's like
yeah, there's some big ideas. I like the idea of Vader when it's Vader, you know, getting in the shit.
Yeah.
You know, and in this particular case, it's like they found the guy they're chasing. They go after him in the nebula. They jump out, but Vader's in his ship, and he sneaks on board. Mm-hmm. And now it's like Vader against all of them. And I like that.
He's fighting a cybernetic super space rancor.
Yeah.
At the end here, that's the cliffhanger.
And, good stuff.
It is. It's really fun. It's unreserved now. There's no qualifications to it.
Yeah.
It's super fun. So I'm excited to get through the rest of this.
Me too. Yeah. Well done, Kieran Gillen. When he gets the 25, that will be an accomplishment. So.
All right. So those are the comics we wanted to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can talk about what you read this week. What did you enjoy? Did you hate everything like Josh?
I didn't hate. I talked about a lot of things I liked. And I don't appreciate. No, it's let's get this out. Don't put me in your box.
Is Josh in a box? Tell us at fanboy.com. We're going to skip the emails because we have the rating segment, which always goes
ratings.
Long.
Ratings.
But if you, how would you rate the last segment, Ron?
I give it a 3.5.
3.5. That's fair.
We can do better.
You did better.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
You sticking with it?
Yeah, definitely. Of course.
We're gonna keep doing that section.
If you have any questions or comments you want to get on the show, probably once the Rebirth issues end, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from. And how long you've been thinking about your question, because that really tells us how much we should respect it.
Yes.
Now, are the Rebirth issues ever going to end, or is this forever now?
This is it. This is our lives.
Wow. All right.
No, the Rebirth are just in June, right? And then they move, they settle down, right?
Next week we have...
Whoa, I was like, I have to answer? I don't know.
We have only one.
All right.
Only one next week, so it's going to be a shorter segment. Maybe we'll get an email in next week.
All right.
I can't imagine we're going to talk about Titans Rebirth for very long. I mean, I will, but I don't imagine.
I will say, Titans.
I used to read Titans.
There's not going
to
be any expectations on my part, so it's going to go in clean. And even if they're doing something repeated, although I do remember that the New 52 Titans was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, this is also Dan Abnett, I believe.
Oh, well, I like Dan Abnett a lot.
There you go. Let's talk about what's coming up. What else are we doing? What else are we working on?
Well, if you are a subscriber to the iFanboy podcast feed, you will have found in your feed this week a Talksplode, our interview podcast, with myself talking to Tom King of Sheriff of Babylon and Vision, and Mitch Gerrits, artist and co-creator on Sheriff of Babylon and a former run on Punisher and Activity. And it was.
And we have decided that's how you say his name?
Yeah. I talked to him. I said that's right. I've been saying it right, and he said yes, but everybody else gets it wrong. And then I felt superior, and then I can go about my day. I talked to them for a little over an hour. It was a little about their careers, a little about the industry, a little bit about the craft, a little bit about the books. not my strong point, but it's a super fun show, and I've got a lot of really good feedback on it. People seem to really be enjoying it, and I appreciate that very much. When you let me know.
So when's the next one?
I got someone who checked with me. They were like, "You gonna do these more? I want to do one." I said, "Sure." So
that's coming out next week?
Nope. Nope.
Okay.
I'm not making any promises on those.
Week after?
It's not then. No.
August 18th.
See, what the people at home don't know is that he tried to get me to schedule it earlier, and I was like, "I'm not gonna play your game, pal." That's a clue.
All right. Ron, we may have another show.
Yes, we may have another show if we can work things out. We are all longtime fans of the video game franchise Warcraft and World of Warcraft and all that stuff. And this weekend shows the release of the Warcraft movie. And if the stars align, we're going to get together to watch it and then talk about it. So stay tuned for that.
Our intention is to do it. However, we've run into some scheduling problems.
Yep.
There is a chance it will not happen.
So if it is, Merry Christmas in June. If not, I imagine you're going to live without it, so that's fine.
Yes. So but check that out.
If you need something to listen to,
you can still listen to Goodfellas Minute. In fact, we keep hearing from people who've just discovered it and are listening to it, and we love that because we had so much fun doing it. I think about it all the time, mostly because it was all I was doing for so long. GoodfellasMinute.com is where you can find it, where we went through the movie Goodfellas 1 minute at a time. We had lots of great guests. There's so much content if you need a podcast to listen to. There's so much show there, and check it out. We are not doing Casino Minute.
No.
Just not happening. Yeah. But we really love Goodfellas Minute, so check it out. We appreciate it if you do. Thank you. In the meantime, head over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books. Find all of our other podcasts, like the ones we just mentioned, or other special edition shows. There have been a lot so far this summer. You can also follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
And if you like the show, go to iTunes or go to wherever you download it. And if there's any sort of review functionality, utilize it and tell people that you like it. And best of all, help spread the word. So many of you post about iFanboy on Twitter and Facebook and things like that. We love to see that. We try to like and heart and fave and do everything we can. So please keep on doing that. Tell your friends about the show. Help spread the word. We appreciate that so much. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Ratings.
Ratings.
Stormtroopers.
Stormtroopers hitting the ground.
Ron, what would you give Josh's performance on this episode?
That's a two. Easy.
Wow.
You know, I did say people don't want to hear me talk about all these issues that I didn't want to read.
True.
I mean, it's not like I didn't say that was coming. Stab me inside your head. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.